By the curse of fortune, the blockading squadron had been on the starboard tack when the French came out, nearing the top of their long loop to the north. So they were a good mile or so from the action when the Bombay fired her first broadside, and the distance lengthening with every minute until they could come about. Aboard the Pondicherry there was a frantic sense of urgency, the air filled with the fiendish wail of bosun's pipes, and the decks packed with running men as the off-duty watch tumbled up from below. Tully had four men heaving at the helm as the bows began their laborious journey through 15 points of the compass, and Joyce was bellowing with all his considerable might, as if the power of his lungs alone could trim the sails. Nathan watched in a fever of impatience, hugely frustrated by his inactivity. In the Unicorn he would have swung the ship's head right up into the wind and beyond, until the sails filled on the opposite tack, and she would have been hurtling into battle by now, clearing for action. But the Cherry was not the Unicorn, and Tully would not risk laying her in irons, so he let her fall right off, swinging her fat stern to the wind. Slowly, slowly the bows came round. Nathan had never seen anything so slow. Not so much Hannibal as a great lumbering elephant. It was all he could do to restrain himself from adding his voice to Joyce's, for all the good that would do. But at last they were round, the sails luffing and then filling on the larboard tack, with a crack that echoed the sound of the distant guns. Tully was already calling for more canvas. The sailing master, Mr. Olafson, aimed his speaking trumpet at the tops, and the marine drummer, but no, Nathan had to remind himself they had no marines. The drummer of the 12th foot was beating to quarters, but they had fallen way, way to windward, further even than Nathan had feared. He could not see Tully's face in the darkness, but he knew how he must be feeling, for his last command had been the Bonaventure, a fast French corsair they had taken off Corfu, and she could have turned on a sixpence. They had near a mile and a half now to make up, and the battle was still moving away from them. Worse, and to Nathan's despair, the rest of the squadron was following them round as if they were still on blockade duty, maintaining their course until they reached the exact position from which Pondicherry had begun her own turn. Nathan raged inwardly as he watched them, sailing steadily ahead in their perfect line, but away from the battle. It did not matter if they reached the battle like a mob on the rampage, so long as they reached it as fast as they possibly could. "Can you believe it?" he said aloud as his impatience got the better of him. "Why do they not turn?" "They think you mean them to keep the line," said Joyce unhappily. "Obviously," Nathan snapped. "But is there not one among them who realizes it is not the line that matters, but the bloody battle?" "We could fire a gun," said Tully. But Nathan feared a gun would only confuse them further. The Antelope was already beginning to wear, with the Cornwallis coming up behind her. It was best now to let them be. But the Cherry was still coming round, and she was about to cross the loop, just abaft the Eagle. Nathan grabbed the voice trumpet off the master and ran up onto the poop, a lone figure at the weather rail, with the Union flag streaming out behind him. He raised the trumpet to his lips and shouted with all the force at his command, if not quite the full venom, "Mr. Foley there! Foley, you damn fool, you whoremongering son of a bitch! Turn! Turn now! Turn at once!" But it was useless, pissing into the wind. The Eagle sailed serenely on. But then he felt Tully's hand on his shoulder, and he saw the ship behind her breaking out of line, her bows turning to starboard. The little Comet. Nathan watched anxiously, lest she be laid aback. But she continued to swing round, right into the teeth of the wind, further, further, until the slack sails filled out and she was on the larboard tack, about a cable's length off their weather side and pushing ahead of them already towards the distant battle raging to the south. "Good man!" Nathan cried. Cutler, of course. One man at least with a mind of his own. The Stromboli, the last ship in the line, went sailing on in the wrong direction as if she had all the time in the world, and to be fair, she had little reason to hurry.